and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. Last day of November, believe it or not. Although, you know, for some people to say, well, it's about time. I mean, we're more than a week past Thanksgiving, and here it is still November. Very unusual. Well, we'll flip the calendar page tonight, and it'll be December the 1st tomorrow. Holiday time. Speaking of that, we're going to be talking about model trains a little bit later on the program today. Pleased to welcome Jack Bennett and Pat Gallagher back with us to talk about model trains. If you're of a certain age, they were a staple at holiday time. But that's coming up a little bit later. Our first guest is Mitch Natale, who's visiting with us here in the studio. Mitch, good to see you, as always.
Likewise, Dave. Always good to interact with you.
Deacon Mitch Natale from the Butler Area Catholic Parishes here to talk about, you have a men's fellowship conference coming up.
That's correct, Dave. We call it Gather the Logs, Rekindle the Fire. And what we do, Dave, it's to be halfway between the... In Pittsburgh, they have, for the whole diocese, an event of the gathering of Catholic men.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a yearly event. Sometimes they delay it a year and a half or whatever, but we have our event halfway in between just to keep those fires burning from what were started and nourished at the gathering of Catholic men. And we try to make it a regional thing. We hope to have it more for the Northern Vicariate Four. It seems like it's maybe a little less than that. Has no cost to it. We do take up a free will offering to help defray our costs, but it's free. And it's a half a day, so it's not to impact too much of the day, but it gather the guys together to just renew the faith and enlighten and in the faith.
And when will this be, Mitch?
I'm glad you asked. It's a week from tomorrow, December the 8th. That's a holy day, but we will have a Mass at the beginning of the day, so that'll fulfill that obligation. And that's what it'll be from 8 to approximately noon. It starts off with Mass at 8. And our theme is Your Mother's Arms, and just being in Mary's arms. And with it being the holy day, the Immaculate Conception of Our Lady, that we thought that was an appropriate theme for the day.
And where will this all take place?
It'll be at St. Andrew's up on North Main Street Extension.
Mm-hmm. Rue Day just north of Butler there.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And you say it's free of charge?
That is correct.
There will be speakers?
Yes, we have three speakers. And if I may, give you the names of the speakers and what I know about them.
Yeah, please do.
The first speaker that we're going to start off with is Dennis Johnston. He wrote a book called Your Connecting Flight to Heaven. And it talked about him and his faith experience. He had gone over to Medjugorje with Tom Rutkowski and a group from GOSPA. And that gave him a religious experience that's impacted his life.
But so, in Yugoslavia, the former Yugoslavia.
Yeah, it's, in that area. And he is just excited to talk about his faith, the importance of faith, and how that is, well, he was in his mother's arms, our mother's arms.
And he's a layperson?
Yeah, he's a layperson. He belongs to Holy Sepulchre. So he's local.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that'll be a good one to kick off the morning with that. And we follow with Deacon John Reagan. John was ordained in 2011. I was ordained in 2000. So we've got to know each other through different retreats and gatherings that we've had. Dynamic man. He lives the faith. He works for a major insurance company, and if something is immoral or along the lines of as such, that he says, I can't support that. But he's a good worker. So he combines that thing of being a good employee, an honest employee, a moral employee, and he lives the faith. And he'd be just in his presence and talking to him, I get inspired to continue living the faith. So I think he'll be a good one.
Where's he from?
He's from Elizabeth, PA. He's from down south of Pittsburgh.
So that's Elizabeth. That's on the Monongahela River, I think.
Down
the Mon Valley somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Our third speaker is Father Terry O'Connor. Fairly young pup. He was born in 69. He and I were ordained deacons together, and that's where I first got to know Terry. And Father Terry, it's an interesting story with him. You may remember Bob O'Connor, who was the mayor of Pittsburgh.
Yes, the late Bob O'Connor.
Correct, yes. Terry is one of his children.
Oh.
And he's...
And then his brother's a councilman then,
that
right?
is correct.
Yeah.
Yes, Colin, I think, or something
mm-hmm.
like that. Yeah. He grew up in the Squirrel Hill area. I believe his mother is Jewish, so whenever they had that thing, a Tree of Life... if you saw some of the TV clips on it, you saw Father Terry over there. And dynamic man with that also. Interesting history. I mean, he wasn't baptized till he was 19. He was a lawyer for a while. Then he went into the seminary. And he's now working as the administrator of the parishes in the McKeesport area. So that's a down south also.
Mm-hmm.
He's spoken, I believe, at some things that Gospas had. They had a retreat thing. But when I talked to him about it, he says, always willing to talk about Our Lady. So Father Terry will give another good talk about Mary, the faith, and
so
our call as Catholic men.
Do these speakers have a specific title to their talks, or are they just going to talk generally about
I gave them what the theme was. I'm sure that Dennis will talk about his experience with Medjugorje and his conversion part. I told these others what the theme is of the day, and they will do appropriately with that.
There will be listeners who are not familiar with Medjugorje, so what happened there?
There were some... apparitions that these children had seen at Medjugorje of Our Lady. And I think they still go on with having the visions of Our Lady. And there are different words that Our Lady shares with the children to share with. I almost went there, but it just circumstances led that I didn't go there. But the people who go there have been changed. It's not that, from what I understand or recollect, it's not that populated as an area. It's more very rural.
Mm-hmm.
Your accommodations would be staying with the people who are in the area, which I think is a good thing to get to know the area, get to understand that, and the lifestyle there. It's no 4-star by any means.
So this would be analogous or similar to the apparitions at Fatima, for example?
Correct.
In Portugal?
Yeah, and Fatima is a very rural area, too. It might even be a little more rural than that.
But this is much more recent than that.
Yes. I'm trying to think of when that first I recall on it. It would be at least 20 years ago, maybe 25, that the children would gather. And In fact, I think the bishops there originally discouraged pilgrims to come. Because there's a whole process you have to go through, that these are valid apparitions, that they're not making this up and things. And I apologize that I'm not sure the status of it, but it hasn't been suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
It continues. The children, of course, have started 20 years ago, and so they've then matured. But they still, I think there's a mountaintop and hillside that they gather, and Our Lady speaks to them.
But obviously, this would be the first speaker, Dennis Johnston?
That is correct.
He was obviously moved by his visit there.
Very much so. And I think very... I know of very few people who have not been moved by being there.
Hmm. And this takes place next Saturday. It's a week from tomorrow.
That's correct, a week from tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Our last one that we had was in March of 17, and so it's a year and a half since then, but it was because of that other event. We try to keep ours yearly, and... them moving theirs to Pittsburgh, moving it to the springtime this year, just caused us to be a year and a half behind.
Is there any significance to this being just for men? It's a men's fellowship?
Yes. I think men need to be supported by men, bonded with men. And what this leads to is smaller groups for men to... talk about different things, different life experiences, be supported in their life experiences. They can talk freely. What this always lead to from Pittsburgh and even to this level, and then getting into parish and grouping levels, men getting together on a regular basis. I think they still at St. Gregory's get together every Saturday. They talk about a book or so. They get together for Mass and share time together. It's a jungle out there, and it's getting to be more temptations, more of an atmosphere that's conducive to falling away from the faith, falling away from being a man of God, a holy man. And it's... we need each other to support each other. And so the guys talk to guys in quote-unquote guys' language to a point. But knowing I know where you are, I know what you're going through, and you can be supportive of one another that way.
These gatherings in Pittsburgh, they're huge, though, aren't they? You know, aren't they held at, the Palumbo Center or something?
Yeah,
or?
They used to be. Then they went over to the... David L. Lawrence Convention Center. The last couple have been held at North Catholic. They've been going on, I think, twice as long as we've had the Gather the Logs.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a dip in attendance with that.
Do you know, are there other regions of the diocese that have similar things? Or?
They have various other things sporadic with that. You know, my vision of it is to have this type of thing in all the vicariates.
Mm-hmm.
I think different pockets have different things. What's encouraged is to be more on a local level. Like at St. Paul's, there are groups that meet the first and third Saturday of the month. Mm-hmm. And Bernie Andrea leads that, and they go through a book. Various books, various talks. The guys get together 7 o'clock in the morning, and they sometimes see a video, sometimes talk about other things from the to then, you know, encourage them to live the faith and to celebrate the faith and to share the faith, and then they can stay for Mass for 8 o'clock. Some do, some you get on with the other day's mm-hmm. work. And then there's another one that's. The third Monday of the month from 7 to 8:30, and that group we get together discussing the different aspects. Books of the Bible, we're in Matthew now, going through that chapter, was trying to understand what's there and so that we can apply it and learn from it.
Are there speakers at these meetings, or do you have facilitators or leaders or something like that?
Yeah, Doug Stiebel leads the one on the third Monday. And again, Bernie Andreo leads the other ones. So these would be the leaders to keep us in line and in direction with those things.
Mm-hmm. But if you're going to talk about, for example, Matthew, do you need somebody who's studied it or, has a bit of more detailed information about that particular gospel?
Or? Yeah, well, we have different commentaries that look on and read up that and share of what we're understanding of it, what we are confused by in it, and what's basically there.
Are these open to any man who's interested?
Sure. Even that, we have it. It's we have it as a Catholic man. It's open to any man to come for that. The ones at St. Paul's, you don't have to be a member of St. Paul's or of the St. Andrew's, St. Peter's, St. Paul's, St. Mike's, St. Fidelis to do that. In fact, the one Saturday morning has a lot from St. Fidelis that are participants in that. I know that out at St. Mary's, I believe, in Herman, they gather Wednesday mornings to do things.
So in addition to the speakers a week from tomorrow, Saturday, mm-hmm. December 8th, will there be anything else? You have music or something?
Yeah, we usually have some gathering music. There's some time for a little fellowship before. The ladies at St. Andrew's just have a great hospitality. They provide have donuts and coffee at the beginning. Gospel Missions will have their books from there. I would imagine Dennis Johnston would have some of his books there through that. So we have some music beforehand with that. The Blessed Sacrament will be exposed after the 8 o'clock Mass. And for time for private worship there to reflect on some of the talks and whatever. We try to have a little break in between the talks for a little fellowship, for time in prayer. Also have time for confession. We'll have confessors available too.
Gospel Missions, that's... It's kind of like a religious bookstore or something.
Correct. That's in Evan City. They have various things. They have you can get have books there. They have icons there. They have statues there. Religious articles. I think they also support a place in Africa.
So they'll bring some of their merchandise to Butler for that.
Right. They'll have their merchandise there probably. Most of it would be books. I'm sure there'd be some religious articles that would be there, too. Mm-hmm.
Probably some DVDs and stuff, too.
Right. Oh, yeah. Things like that. Right. Yeah. Right.
That's gospel, not gospel.
That's correct.
Gospel.
Gospel. I think it had something to do with the Blessed Mother's name in... a language, like an Eastern European language or
That's
so.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Because she was the first gospel. She carried the Christ child. And, she's the first witness.
We're talking to Deacon Nimitz Natale about the upcoming Butler Catholic Men's Fellowship Conference. Gather the logs, rekindle the fire a week from tomorrow, next Saturday, at St. Andrew's and Roman Catholic Church on Route 8 North, North Main Street Extension here in Butler. You're a deacon.
That's right.
So what's the difference between a deacon and a priest?
Ooh, lots of deacons. some have said that we're many priests.
But you're ordained, right?
But we're ordained. Yeah. There's three levels of ordination. There's diaconate, priesthood, and episcopacy. All deacons are ordained deacons. All priests are ordained priests and deacons. And all bishops are ordained all three. So any member of the clergy has been ordained a deacon. Mm-hmm. And like Father Terry O'Connor, we were ordained deacons at the same time. He's a transitional deacon, as they called it.
He's a temporary deacon, you mean?
Well, you know, they say transitional, but it's like once a deacon, always a deacon. And that's you're ordained for service. I stated one time that the deacon's stole goes sideways so that it can be out of the way whenever you minister. And one of the things, like Deacon John Reagan, he has a ministry at the Jefferson Regional Hospital, visitation and distribution of communion. Mm-hmm. We're really the bishop's deacon. He assigns us, and it goes back. Saint Lawrence, who was the Pope's right hand man with the thing, and I don't know if you recall him as saying that the emperor wanted him to see he was in charge of the treasury of the church. And so the emperor wanted him to bring all of those treasures of the church to the emperor. And so he went out and got the poor. He got the weak, the lame, the widows. And he says, this is the treasury of the church.
Mm. Mm.
And that's that of ministry of service. One of the tasks that I have is working with the community dinner. Throughout the city of Butler, there's a church that sponsors it.
It's a different church every night.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And the Catholic grouping is at St. Paul's on Tuesday. And from the various parishes around the area, it's not just limited to the city, they come in on Tuesday to provide a meal for all those who want to come. Just coordinating that, working with them on that, it's a great ministry of service.
Can you, as a deacon, administer any of the sacraments?
Yes. We can hatch, match, and dispatch.
Come again?
Hatch, match, and dispatch, so we can baptize, marry, and bury. Now, burying isn't a sacrament, but is an important part of life that we deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the baptism part, work with that. In fact, this weekend I'll be dealing with a baptism seminar.
So do you do that?
Yeah.
Do you baptize?
Yeah, I've had numerous baptisms that I've had throughout, and it's such an it's really a neat experience with the families and seeing them there and just starting in the church with mm-hmm. them. And so do the prep, but also have done baptisms. Have married people. That's and usually it's whenever there's not a mass involved. And those are usually couples who are mixed faith, and they do not want to have a mass. And so then I work with them in the marriage prep, and then also with the marriage ceremony.
Have you done many of those?
Not very many in the past. I did one not too long ago, about a month ago, and getting more into the flow of doing those. Funerals, if there's something that's going to be held at the funeral home, that's one of my primary responsibilities to work with that.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you a story about the first time I had one of those. There were only three people present. There was myself, the deceased, and his sister. I didn't know him from Adam. He had been up at Sunnyview and had not interacted with him beforehand. And so I had the ceremony, the service, and I was going through that, and his sister interrupted me. And she says, "Why do you guys always do that? He was no good. He was a bum." And I'm there like a deer in headlights. They didn't teach us any of that in Funerals 101. You know, what do I do? And I was blessed to just sit down, beside her and talk with her. I said, tell me about your brother. That was the best thing I could have done. So it's that thing of being, you do the ceremonies, but you also listen and serve. We also preach.
Sermons,
yeah. That's part of our ministry, too.
Have your duties expanded? Because most of our listeners will know that there's a process of consolidating churches going on in the Butler area. Has that meant an expansion of your duties?
Oh, absolutely, Dave. Absolutely. I was prior to that, I was just assigned to St. Paul's. And now I'm assigned to all five parishes, St. Andrew's, St. Paul's, St. Peter's, St. Michael's, and St. Fidelis. So that means being around for the different weekend masses at the different churches and stuff. So it's expanded the flow with that. I was supposed to have a baptism out at St. Fidelis a couple of weeks ago, but the power went out. And so
that's right. That church was out of power that Sunday, wasn't it?
Yes.
After the big storm.
Right.
Hard to believe that was 2 weeks ago already.
Yeah.
Actually, 2 weeks ago yesterday.
Right. Yeah.
Has it been satisfying for you to be a deacon?
Yes, it has. You make an impact, and you see lives change. And in the early years of ministry, I was working at the mill now AK Steel.
Mm-hmm.
And my job was to schedule the slitters. So I would go down and prepare it in a building, go down into the mill and interact with the operators. Language changed whenever I was around. People stopped and talked to me, whether they were Catholic or not.
So the language became less harsh?
Oh,
wasn't quite so blue.
You got that right, Dave. Mm-hmm. And it was like, just the mere presence makes a difference. And and the thing is that as a deacon, I one time was in a seminary for the priesthood, but what had excited me about that ministry was my uncle was a priest. But in his diaconal ordination, that's what got me thinking. Now, there were no permanent deacons at that time. But, that got me thinking about that. And I'm out where the rubber meets the road more than the priest is. And permanent deacons can be married, but we have to be married before ordination.
So that planted the seed from one ceremony of your uncle, huh?
Oh, that's right. That was back in the 50s whenever that happened. So it was about 56, 57.
Well, let's go over the details again
Sure.
of the upcoming event for people who may have joined us and missed the beginning of our conversation. Butler Catholic Men's Fellowship Conference coming up week from tomorrow.
Correct.
Next Saturday. And when and where?
It's going to be from 8 a.m. till approximately noon. It'll start with Mass at St. Andrew's with Father Phil Farrell, the Episcopal Vicar. It's a holy day. It fulfills that obligation. It's from 8 till noon, as I said. After Mass, some fellowship, and then we'll have three speakers. It'll be Dennis Johnston, who's more talking about his experiences in Medjugorje and his life changing with that. Deacon John Reagan, who ministry and living the gospel. I think we'll have some of that with Father Terry O'Connor, who's our last speaker. But I think some of his will be that of his life. He's baptized at age 19, was a lawyer for a while. And then went into the seminary, then ordained a priest. So.
Son of the former mayor of Pittsburgh, too.
Correct.
Well-known name, yeah,
right.
O'Connor.
Yeah.
This is open to anyone, any man, and there's no entrance fee or anything.
No entrance fee, no registration. If you want to come for part of it, that's fine. We would prefer all of it, but if you could only work part into your schedule, that's fine. We close with benediction. The Blessed Sacrament will be exposed after Mass. So time for private prayer. Even if you come just for private prayer for that and don't participate in the talks and the gathering.
And there's no pre-registration or anything like
correct.
That?
Correct. No pre-registration, no fee. Come and be nourished and fed. Be in your mother's arms.
It's good to talk to you, Mitch.
Likewise, yeah, Dave.
Nice to have you here. Deacon Mitch Natale visiting with us. We'll take a break. When we come back, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking about setting up your model train, your model railroad layout for the holidays. And we have a couple of guys who will be with us here in the studio with vast experience and knowledge in model railroading. So I hope you can stick around for that. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes here on It's Your Turn on WISR 680 in Butler. Be right back. Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby's not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available, also prescription diets. You know, one of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 South at Thorncrest Drive.
Dr. Catherine Szabo, practicing family medicine at Butler Health System.
Health really is a family matter. That's why I'm in family medicine. It's for families like Jessica's. As a working mom, she has a lot to juggle. So if something comes up, she knows I'm on top of the whole story. And if they need specialty care, I know the best is right nearby.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Hey, folks, do you realize how long Miller's Shoes has been a presence on Main Street in downtown Butler? Families have been shopping for quality and value at Miller's Shoes for well over a century. They're at 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. And with winter weather on us, Miller's Shoes is your headquarters for overshoes and boots for the bad weather. Timberland Shoes and Boots, for example. Many other famous name brands, too, Rockport, Trotters, and all of your famous name brand athletic shoes. Miller's Shoes, also your local headquarters for America's favorite comfort shoes, SAS Shoes. You'll find them for men and women, various styles and colors, at Miller's Shoes. And don't forget, for gift giving, gift certificates. What a great idea for a holiday gift for someone special. A gift certificate from Miller's Shoes. Stop in, talk to Jimmy Chipran and the folks at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler.
I was just 49 when I started getting mail from AARP. AARP? Shoot, I was just getting started in life. Then I hit my 60s and retirement was on my mind. The big question was, did I prepare? What about healthcare? Are my finances in order? Not just for my wife and me, but for the kids and grandkids. I got the answers I needed from attorney Michael Pater, specializing in elder law, long-term care, Medicaid, and wills and estate planning, is attorney Michael Pater in the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center. Phone 287-7724.
Start spreading the news as the legend of Sinatra lives on. Join WISR this year for an evening with Sinatra on Thursday, December 13th. This dinner dance will be held at the Tanglewood Center with music provided by the Vince Tavolario Quartet. And Vince and the crew will resurrect those famous shows from Christmas time at Natilli's as well. And we'll have Italian food stations created by Chef George. Tickets are just $25 and are available at the WISR office at 252 Pelican. Hollow Street, Natilli's Restaurant, and the Tanglewood Center. As always, it's BYOB. A basket raffle and other fundraising will benefit the March of Dimes, so come celebrate the holiday season and the chairman of the board on Thursday, December 13th at the Tanglewood.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea.
Back. Nice to have you with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. We're going to be talking about model railroading on the next segment of the program. And there's no two better guys to talk about it than Jack Bennett and Pat Gallagher, who are with us here in the studio. Guys, good to see you again. Nice to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. It's hard to believe it's been a year.
It is. You know, well, this is the time of the year when folks get out their, most folks at least, get out their model railroad sets.
Yep.
Set them up for Christmas time.
Yeah, or start some child on a new one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure there are a few people who keep their train sets up year-round, especially if they have monstrous ones set up in the garage or the basement or somewhere. But for most folks, you get it out around Christmas time, keep it up through the holidays, and then it goes back up in the attic, right?
Attic or the basement.
Mm-hmm. So Jack Bennett, by the way, is the operator of Jack's Tracks Train Shop, just outside of Katanning, right?
Yeah, been doing it since 1971.
Mm-hmm. And Pat Gallagher is an aficionado of trains. You've been collecting trains and doing model railroading for many, many years, Pat.
Pretty much, Dave. I got my first set as a child, of course, and just kind of enjoyed it and collected it and got to know Jack and learned a lot from Jack, learned about the values and eras and things. And it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It's really a good time.
Well, I was talking with some of the folks here at the radio station this morning, mentioning the fact that you guys are going to be here today and we're going to talk about model railroads. And, of course, everybody has a story as soon as you mention that.
Yeah.
Mostly guys, and I don't mean to make it too gender-specific, but it seems like that was more of a guy's thing at Christmas time as opposed to girls. I'm sure there are some girls and young ladies who had a train set, but...
Well, and if you looked at the catalogs, the manufacturers pushed the boy thing, and you never saw the girls in the catalogs up to, what, maybe the 70s, Jack, touching the trains in the catalog. Mm-hmm. They were always standing beside the brother, but not having their hands on the trains.
Well, it was a different era.
It was.
It was a different era.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, in this country, we didn't give women the right to vote until 1920, for goodness sakes. That's hard to believe.
That is hard to believe.
The model train company that I know... The only one that I'm really familiar with, Jack Bennett, is Lionel. Are they still around?
They're still around. They started in business in 1900, and they're still going strong. They've moved several times from New York to Michigan, and they're
the company's been sold several times too.
Yes,
numerous. Yes.
Yeah, Neil Young had it.
Neil Young, the singer.
Yeah. Yes,
singer songwriter.
Yes,
from Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow,
he was part owner, right, Jack?
He was part owner, and.
Richard Kuhn was
the other one. I was trying to think. I met him out in one of the.
He was a multimillionaire landowner, investor, something like that. Right. He bought the company. Yeah.
Well, Lionel, they went bankrupt for a while, though, didn't they? Have they emerged from that?
66, 67, somewhere in that area.
Almost, I recall, right?
Almost, yeah. They put out a foldover and a catalog that year. It was just 4 pages. They actually was.
In 1969, General Mills bought them lock, stock, and barrel and moved it to Mount Clemens, Michigan.
General Mills, the cereal company?
Yes. Yes.
Cheerios?
Yes. Yes.
What a long, strange trip it's been. Neil Young is a part owner, and then the Cheerios people.
Well, General Mills also owned, what was the hobby division, Jack? I can't recall, but they owned a model division, so they kind of incorporated the trains into their modeling sort of thing.
MPC, Model Products Corporation.
Correct, yeah.
Were there and are there still other brands of model trains other than Lionel?
Many, many brands. There's more trains on the market now than you can shake a stick at, to use an old term. Lionel, MTH, Mike's Train House, American Flyer is on the market, but it's owned by Lionel.
Yeah.
Marx is still on the market, but it's owned by a company out of Florida. Bachmann. Williams is still around, but it is owned by Bachmann now.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Jerry Williams retired. Mm-hmm. And
some of the other names, older names like Ives, Hornby, Marks, of course, made a lot of the cheaper metal and plastic trains. Tyco, Atlas, Weaver, and the German Marklin.
Marklin.
Yeah.
Weaver went out of business.
They did.
A year ago.
I didn't know that.
I didn't realize there were that many companies. I did know that modular railroading is popular in many, many countries, not just the United States. When you mentioned Germany,
yes. Germany's
that's one
big.
Country big on model railroading. Great Britain is. Of course, both those countries have a lot of trains still running, too.
Yeah.
They've got passenger service all over the place.
Well, and not only manufacturers, many different gauges, too, from the larger, the old early part of the century standard gauge rails, clear down to...
Standard, with quotation marks.
Yeah, well, that's because Lionel called their gauge, they called it standard gauge, and they went with it from there on.
Well, I can remember when I was a kid, my brother and I had a Lionel train outfit, and I had a friend in the neighborhood. It seemed like every classmate, every guy had a train set, but we couldn't run the one our trains on each other's tracks because he had an American Flyer, and it was different gauge. Is that the right terminology? Gauge.
Yeah, that's S gauge. Yeah,
it was slightly smaller. It wasn't miniature, but it was the track was slightly narrower.
Right, it was more closer to scale, to S scale, than Lionel was to O scale. Lionel was O gauge, which is the width of the track, not necessarily the cars were to scale. But American Flyer was closer generally to scale, weren't they, Jack?
3/16.
Yeah, but they were closer to real scale. Yeah, and American Flyer was 2-rail track, where Lionel was a 3-rail track.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember that from my set, 3 rails. Yeah. Did all the rails have power, or was it just one of them? Or
center rail had power, too. The outside rails were ground.
They were the ground side, right?
So that's why they had the third rail in the middle, huh?
Yeah.
Which leads to the, in today's world, the political term, third rail.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that members of Congress are afraid to touch, the third rail, because that was the rail with the power. Jack's shaking his head. That's where it came from.
Oh, I don't doubt that a bit, but we have such a mess.
So I remember American Flyer, Lionel, Marks. That's M-A-R-X, by the way, right?
Correct. Yeah.
I don't remember them.
Marks made everything. They made tin toys, plastic toys, trains, dolls. I don't know if you remember a big science fiction creature called the Great Garlou back in the early 60s, big walking plastic creature. They made that. Marks made everything. Where Lionel pretty much, except for a few exceptions, they made trains. Mm-hmm. There were a few exceptions along the way, but generally Lionel's core business was trains.
So Marks was a big toy company.
Big toy company. Like in fact, they were the biggest, weren't they, Jack, for a time?
I don't know about the biggest, but they were the easiest to obtain because they were for sale in G.C. Murphy and Woolworths.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And the prices were a lot less than Lionel's.
They were.
That's and frankly, they were as close to as good as Lionel was.
Mm-hmm.
They've held up over the years just the same as a Lionel engine held up.
Back in those days, the heyday of model railroading, were there especially train shops like yours, Jack, or did most people buy their trains at, you know, like department stores or somewhere?
There were places like mine that were little standalones in a basement, in a backyard, in a garage. There were also the paint shop, Pittsburgh Plate Glass, Ace Auto, Dean Phipps. There was this private kind of stores like Schlimmer and Son in Catania. It was a stationary store, but at Christmas time, their shelves were all taken up with trains.
They got the trains. Mm-hmm. Dave Blatt's Auto Supply in Butler sold trains.
Big place.
Blatt's and Allen's Toy Store and Troutman's, Kmart had trains. We even had an authorized repair guy in Butler too on North Elm Street for a while.
Mm.
Yeah,
I can remember when I was a kid, my brother and I The place where we would always go to look at them was described as a hardware store in Clarion. It was called Dietz, as I remember. Dietz. Does that name ring a bell with you guys?
It certainly does.
Mm-hmm. They had, of course, I was small, 6, 7, or 8 years old, something like that. It just seemed like an enormous train layout at Dietz.
Yeah.
Of course, everything looked big when you're that little.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, there's a hardware store in Zillionople. They have a big train display and lots of trains down there. The name escapes me right now, but you can go in there and buy trains all year long. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lionel, orange and blue are their colors.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're copyrighted.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And Lionel was the owner's middle name, by the way. Joshua Lionel Cohen.
Never knew that. Yeah. Never knew where it came from.
Cohen, or later on, Cowan. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
The glory days of Lionel would have probably been then in the first half of the 20th century, the first half of the 1900s.
55.
That was the heyday?
The heyday. That's when they came out with the war bonnet, Santa Fe red and silver. And that train set made Lionel.
That was one of the biggest years in sales, too, wasn't it,
yeah.
Jack? Because it started to dip in, I think, around 1957. There was a dip in the economy, and the train suffered a little bit. Mm-hmm. But as they wore into the 60s, the space toys and the remote control things, and there was a lot of other things vying, and also race sets, vying for these dollars for trains, and Lionel suffered quite a bit. They diversified into all kind of crazy things.
Oh, my, yes.
They were making record players. They were making fishing kits. They were making science kits. They were just everything.
Chemistry.
Yeah.
Well, that's also about the same time that the railroad industry started to taper off, across the country. Passenger service declined to practically nothing.
Yes.
And we started to see all the mergers. And lo and behold, it affected Butler specifically because Pullman Standard went out of business.
Right.
It just wasn't the demand for the rail cars that there had been. So the decline of Lionel pretty much paralleled the decline of railroads here in the United States.
Pretty much one followed the other, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of sad. I was looking online this morning just to see what kind of trains were still available, and to check the prices.
Hmm. Well, you'll love the prices, Dave.
I was kind of surprised, and I don't know whether this looked like the train that my brother and I had. It was a Lionel. It was O-gauge, and they call it the Pennsylvania Flyer now. I don't know whether it was called that back in the day. I know that the locomotive had PRR on the nameplate on the front,
yes.
Pennsylvania Railroad.
Sure.
Whether it was a Pennsylvania Flyer or not. But the locomotive looks to be about the same. It was a steam locomotive, engine. Right?
242 with a wheel arrangement. Two pony wheels, four drive wheels, two trail wheels.
Two in the back, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a complete set you were looking at there?
Let me see what's in it here. The price, by the way, and this was a low end. $279.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Let me see what was included here. Track set, train set, track, power supply, ready to run out of the box. That's all it says. It doesn't say anything about how many cars or anything.
Probably three, I'm going to guess. Three cars, the tender and the engine.
That's
probably.
It?
Probably,
yeah. Yeah.
That's also a remote control, Bluetooth available.
Oh, really?
Yep.
At that price range?
Yep.
How about that?
I just sold one of those this morning for less than that.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm. Yeah. So you don't have to sit next to a transformer anymore with your hands on it?
Nope. You plug this sender, I call it a sender, you plug that unit into the wall, and you can walk around anywhere in a room. No wires, no.
And for folks that had a really big layout, that would be terrific, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And if you spend a little more money, you can ultimately run multiple trains from one controller, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Now, of course, obviously, more money involved, and but it's possible. Yeah, it's amazing what the technology has done.
Well, I looked up one other one because diesels came. I don't know when diesels became popular and kind
late,
of outpaced the steam engines.
Late 40s, they were starting to come in.
Late 40s?
Yeah.
And most trains that still run today are diesel, right?
Oh, yeah.
Probably all of them.
Diesel or electric.
Electric, yeah.
Electric, too, yeah. There was another set in here called the Santa Fe Lion Chief, and the picture of it showed two diesel locomotives, one facing frontwards and one facing backwards.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember seeing that before, and I've always wondered, how come two and how come they face in the opposite directions? Do you know, Jack Bennett?
I really don't know why they're facing the opposite directions. They
had reverse, right?
Sure.
You could put it in reverse. You wouldn't need another one facing the other direction to
I always thought it was more of a look than anything else, because they had what they call a B unit that had no front and back, and that sometimes that would be in between for more pulling power, and it looked like they call it an A unit, a B unit, and an A unit facing the other way. So I think it had to be more for looks, because you'll see them on the railroad sometimes where they're all facing the same direction. It doesn't make any difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this one, by the way, was $500.
Mm-hmm. Well, you haven't hit anything.
Yeah, I was going to say you haven't. You haven't hit the apex.
I'm still lowballing it.
Oh, you're still lowballing.
You're low to mid with $500.
That Pennsylvania Flyer, that's the bottom line. That is the bottom line. And it goes up from there, sets engines, separate engines range anywhere up to $2,000.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Wow. Highly detailed, like steam engines, things like that. Very highly detailed, yeah. Very nice, beautiful stuff. And the technology involved, they look real, they sound real.
It better be for $2,000.
Exactly, Dave.
Goodness gracious.
Right.
I also noted a couple of things on, I think this is on Lionel's website. They're obviously trying to appeal to the younger generation today. They had a Polar Express model, which stems from the movie, sure. I suppose, yeah. Polar Express. And they had a Hogwarts model.
Yeah.
It
Harry
didn't
Potter.
Say anything about it, but it had to be Harry Potter.
Yeah,
right?
It is. Yep. Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Polar Express, Jack, they've been selling that in some form for almost 10 years, right?
Oh, yeah, that was 10 years last year or the year before. I don't know which. And, they put out 6 extra cars with that. Then they put out HO.
Yep.
And I don't know whether they've got standard S gauge this year.
G, too. Isn't there a G set?
Yeah, there is a G.
Yeah.
And they put out a battery powered one of all crazy things.
I just remember the first couple of years that came out. That set was so in demand. People they couldn't make enough of it.
The Polar Express?
Yeah, the original O-gauge Polar Express. And the price was right, as I recall, Jack.
Yeah, but it wasn't much more than that PA Flyer.
No,
about $269 or $79, something like that.
And they were passenger cars that were lit. It was a very nice train set.
Mm.
And that's one, for some reason, as much as I liked it, I never bothered to buy one. But couldn't make them fast enough.
If you still had, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners right now do still have, up in the attic somewhere, maybe it's been up there for years, one of these older sets, are they worth anything today, Jack Bennett?
They are worth, it depends, like just like a coin or guns or whatever, anything that anybody collects. It depends upon age, it depends upon condition, it depends upon how many were made at the time, it depends on how well they've been taken care of. There's all sorts of what-ifs.
Condition is everything. In anything you collect, condition is everything.
Condition.
And rarity, like Jack was saying, rarity. If they made the same unit for years on end and it was a medium-priced piece, whatever it was, there's lots of them out there. They don't have a lot of collectability.
I've heard, while I've done some shows with the antiques appraisers, so I know a little bit about this, dolls, for example, collectible dolls are much more valuable if you have the original box, believe it or not, that it came in.
Yeah.
Would that apply to trains or cars as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very much so.
In fact, there are times, depending upon the item, that the box is worth more than the item.
Really?
That's the truth.
Yeah.
That's the absolute truth,
When the piece was a rarity, the box was a super rarity.
Yeah. Mm. Cardboard degrades. Yeah. And many people, I have some friends here in town with their mother, threw out the boxes after they got the trains. They said, I did you a favor, I got rid of all those boxes. And he just like dropped his head. Oh, goodness, you know.
Anybody that has questions or comments, feel free to join us. Join our discussion at 283-2525. We may have a caller with something to add to our discussion right now. Hi, caller, this is Dave. Go right ahead, it's your turn.
Hi, Dave, how you doing?
Just fine.
My name is Tori DePrill.
Hi, Tori.
And hi, I'm a friend of Pat Gallagher.
Hello, Tori.
We grew up together years ago. I haven't been in Butler for about 50 years. I'm calling from Massachusetts. But anyhow, I just thought I'd share a real quick story about trains when I was a kid, if you don't mind.
Please do.
Yeah, when I was a child, my father, our living room had a sun porch off to the side, and there were French doors in between. And every year he would build what he called the platform, and it was a big wooden thing that stood about a foot and a half off the floor, and the Christmas tree sat in the middle of it, and the train, my American Flyer from about 1950 that was all chrome, was set up around the tree at the bottom of the tree, along with a bunch of those old, remember the old cardboard villages with, you know, that you'd put those big lights in and they had like glitter all over them. That was the village.
Those are very hard to find these days.
I spent my childhood really enjoying that train. you know, the controller would look like one of those old fake-like telephones. The thing was huge. And it was an American flyer.
Did it take up the whole sun porch?
Oh, yeah, it took up a lot of room. It was an O-scale, you know, great big thing. And, yeah, we had a great time with that. That was one of the highlights of my childhood, was watching that train go around and shorten it out with some tinsel once in a while.
Yeah, the old lead tinsel, right, Tori?
Fast,
that's right. If a piece of an icicle or something from your tree dropped down onto the track, you'd have quite a light show there.
Short it right out. Absolutely, you know. But those are some of the best times I ever had when I was a kid. You know, all the presents went underneath so you couldn't see them. You didn't know what was under the tree, you know. But that little platform thing with the train and the village and all that was just great.
What happened to your What happened to your train, do you know?
It's still sitting there.
Oh, you still have it? Oh,
yeah, it's about a 1950 American Flyer, you know. I haven't used it in a while, but, you know, I've since moved on to some of the smaller things, you know, HO and then N scales. But I always had a lot of fun with that big train.
Well, gosh, thanks thanks for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, I just thought you'd enjoy it. All right. Nice. Well, thank you very much. You guys continue your show.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Tori.
Nice to have you listening in Massachusetts. We do stream this program, so you can pick it up anywhere you are, on your computer or your phone or your laptop or whatever.
Devices, as they say today.
That's right. Any device you have, yes. You can get our program. Phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. We also had a platform for hours. I'm trying to think. It was probably a 4x8 sheet of plywood. I think that my dad, who had a wood shop, might have added another 4x4 piece, because we had a pretty big platform. Raised 2x4 height off the living room floor. Mm-hmm. Christmas tree set in the middle. I guess that was pretty typical.
Very typical.
Pretty standard.
And the train ran around. Now, we had more than just an oval. We had some cut-ins, too, you know, that we would make it a shorter circuit.
Switches.
Yeah. So you installed switches there, and you could, as the train was coming around, you could flip the switch, and it actually sent the train onto another track.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there was no end to a kid's imagination back then. All it took, I guess, was a little bit of money and prodding Dad to take me down to the train shop and get me a new car or get me a couple of switches and some more track maybe, you know. Yeah.
Well, that was pretty typical during our childhood years to get a new car every year. Christmas time.
I always hoped I did. I always hoped that one of those boxes is going to be that orange and blue underneath all that wrapping paper, you know.
And another car.
Yeah.
Or maybe another piece to the village, which now our caller mentioned a cardboard village. My brother and I had a plastic one.
Plasticville.
That's right. That was the name of the company.
Yeah.
Plasticville. And that was part of the fun of assembling everything, because you had to put those buildings together every year. I mean, it wasn't rocket science, but it was still project.
It was fun, and it was interesting to try to keep them together once you had them together.
Right,
it's true. They kind of clicked together. They didn't glue them or anything, but they kind of...
Oh, lots of them glued them.
Lots of people did glue them. Yeah, then it was difficult to put them away.
It takes up a lot more space whenever you're storing them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Even the older Plasticville in the original boxes with all the pieces, certain figures and certain buildings do have value. Mm-hmm. The key is having all the little pieces, maybe the chimney or the antenna or the guide rails, to have all those pieces in the box. That's the key right there.
Mm-hmm.
But there's lots and lots of Plasticville. I still have my grandmother's Plasticville, stuff my dad and mom bought. I still have it at the house. Have my dad's set.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Jack Bennett, you've brought some sound effects with you here today. What have you got? You got something wired up over there already?
Yeah, we've got a Mark station.
Yeah, this is a pressed metal station. What about eight inches by 10 inches? And there we go. We got a little whistle action going. Yep.
Wow, how about that?
Nothing digital, no Bluetooth, no nothing. Purely mechanical. Just the most wonderful little thing.
Got an impeller inside. It spins around on a little electric motor, just like a
And you, I couldn't quite see what you were doing there. You just flip a switch and then.
Well, I don't know. I've got this just set up to, for direct wire.
I see.
Just touching a clip on it, yeah.
There's a switch on the top of the, it's taped on the structure. That's the original switch. And that's what makes this particular piece much more valuable, is that switch is lost most of the time.
Yeah, mostly.
Mm-hmm. And then there is no other one. I mean, you could put a lot of off-on switches in there, but this is the actual one that came with the piece.
It says marks right on the switch, yeah. Okay. Well, that was part of the fun, too, of the railroads, was you get an accessory, maybe a crossing gate or a banjo signal or something that lights up. Now you've got a wire, so you figure that part out as a kid, get it to work, and then maybe next year you get something else, and you figure out how to wire that and which terminals on the transformer to put the wires on, you know. It was a lot of fun, and it still is for me today. It still is a good time.
Mm-hmm. How big a layout do you have these days, Pat?
I don't have a layout, Dave. No? Christmas trains once in a while, you know. But I still appreciate them. I just don't have space to leave a permanent layout up. Mm-hmm. I've got other interests going that take up all that space.
I know some people that actually, they run them from room to room. You know, mm-hmm. they've got so much track that they can run it from the living room into the dining room and then back into the living room again?
I can remember visiting Mr. Gallagher and have to step over to get in the door.
When I was setting them up every year at the house, they ran through three rooms. They ran right, one track ran right down the middle of the living room, into the other room, into the kitchen, back into the living room. And for about 2 weeks, you didn't vacuum your carpets. I mean, what can I do?
We'll take a break, and we'll be back to talk more about model trains. At this time of the year, it's the thing, huh? Holiday time and model railroads. Back with more of It's Your Turn here on WISR right after this message. It's the holiday season, and you're buying gifts for everyone, but not everyone lives around here anymore. So you've got to ship those gifts, and you want a local, reliable shipping company that you can trust to get that package to your loved ones. We suggest Going Postal in Butler. Going Postal, just off Newcastle Road. They'll find a way to ship just about anything. Simple, too. Just take the gift up. They pack it. They ship it. And if you want to get stocking stuffers like lottery tickets or Christmas cards, they've got those, too. They're just off Newcastle Road, right in between Villa Grande and King's Restaurant. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping store. Welcome back, good friends. We're talking about model trains, model railroading as we enter the holiday season. We have another caller with a question or a comment. Hi, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is Larry Wolf down in West Virginia. Hi. I'm also a friend of Pat's.
Hi, Larry.
How you doing, Pat?
Hello, Larry. Nice to hear from you, buddy.
Just listened to this with a lot of interest. I still have my electric train from 1950. It's an American Flyer that I got for Christmas when I was 5 years old, and I've still got it, all the original boxes.
Wow.
Even in the original big box that it came in, the price is still marked on the big box. The whole set was $29.95. And it still runs great. And we used to put it up a lot around the Christmas tree when our son was younger, but we haven't had it up for a few years now. But I had it up within the last 5 years, and it still runs just fine. And it still looks as good as it always did. And there's still that choo-choo sound, the smoke coming out the smokestack, and it's great.
That's pretty amazing. You know, a toy that was built in 1950 still operates perfectly today.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it runs great. Runs great.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Larry's fortunate in the fact he still has the outer set box, that all the cars and boxes, he has the outer shipping box. Most people don't have that. You may have a couple cars.
What Pat say? I couldn't hear what he said.
You still have the outer shipping box for your set, not just the car boxes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Came in the big cardboard box that it all came in.
That's a rarity there.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you still set it up every year or just once in a while, Larry?
I haven't had it set up for about 5 years now, but we used to set it up quite regularly at Christmas, especially when our son was younger. He had the engineer's hat and the neckerchief and the bib overalls. He had the whole outfit.
Good memories, huh?
Sure is.
Yeah.
All right, I'll let you guys go.
Thanks.
Talk to you later, Pat.
All right, Larry, you take care. Merry Christmas to you.
You too, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Larry, from West Virginia. He mentioned something that I had forgotten about, smoke coming out of the smokestack of my Pennsylvania Railroad locomotive.
Did yours take, do you recall, did it take liquid or did it take a pellet?
No, it had little pills that looked kind of like an aspirin or an Excedrin tablet or something like that. Oh, there you still got them.
There you go. Lionel SP smoke pellet.
Look at these things. There they are. And you put them in with the... You stuffed them into the top of the smokestack, and then there was a little a tool that you kind of rammed them down in with.
Wooden plug.
Yeah.
A little tamper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the you see in the cannons, you know, that they used back in the Civil War.
Yeah.
Pushed the cannonball in.
Well, after World War II was over, it was a race between Lionel and Flyer to come up with a good smoking system that wasn't toxic, didn't hurt anybody, but yet was reliable. And they went back and forth quite a bit on that, as I recall.
Boy, if they still make these today, these tablets?
Yeah, another company makes them, yes.
Yeah, someone does.
Probably got 8,000 warnings on them, you know.
Yeah, they do.
Keep away from children. These are not pills. Yeah.
But they are completely benign. They won't hurt you.
They won't hurt you.
Yeah.
You just smoke a lot after you eat them. Yeah. Let's take another call. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. You're on the air. Hello. It's your turn. Yes, go ahead.
Hello, Dave. Yes. Mine took the pills and made the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
But the question I have for two of the most knowledgeable guys in a couple of counties here, what year did the Magna Traction come out on Lionel?
I don't know, around 50.
1950. They experimented in 1949 with a Santa Fe switcher.
What was Magna Traction anyway?
It was a magnet that was placed next to the drive axle.
Yeah.
And then the drive axle then becomes magnetized and holds itself to the rail.
Yeah.
Better traction on the rails. Yeah, 1950 they introduced magnet traction after experimenting with different systems in 1948 and 49.
I think that caller has left us there, but anyway, that answers his question. Yeah. 1950.
And 1950 was their 50th anniversary.
And it came out with the anniversary train, the yellow Union Pacific passenger train.
Yep. So that was a big year for Lionel.
Let's take another call. Hi, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
David.
Yes, hi.
This is...
Go right ahead.
Turn your radio
Dave,
down.
Dave, you there?
Yes, turn your radio down and listen to us. Yeah.
It's Rambo, Dave. How are you doing?
Pretty good. What can we do for you?
The reason that you see engines... one heading one way and one heading the opposite way?
Yes, why?
Is if that train would be taking the load to Armico and it would unload there, they'd switch onto a different track and they would leave to go get another load. So you always have a train leading.
Well, couldn't you just put the original one in reverse and back it up?
You can't. They don't. They need the engineer to be at the head of it.
Oh,
you've never seen a train going down a track with the motors in the front.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, we got it.
Never thought about that.
And I didn't think about the local connection at Armco either.
Yeah, well, anywhere that a train would go and drop its freight and say it would have, they'd have to unload that freight at that company, well, them engines ain't going to lay dead. They're going to boogaloo somewhere else.
Gotcha.
And get all more freight.
Well, yeah. Thanks for answering my question. I appreciate that, my friend.
I appreciate it too, Dave.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave. This is Larry again from West Virginia.
Yes, Larry.
You were talking about the smoke. And in the American Flyer trains, at least back in the early 50s, what came with my train were little pellets that were not even weren't pellets, it was a liquid, but they were in a thing that felt almost like a bath, like a bubble bath bead, if you will.
Oh.
Something to that effect. It was real, real pliable, had a little snout on the end of it. You snipped off with the scissors, squirted it down in the smokestack, and there you go.
Hmm.
In later years, and I've still got it, you could buy a bottle of it with a dropper, and you just put a couple drops down the smokestack, and off you went. But American Flyer, as far as I know, never used pellets. It was always a liquid.
Hmm. Son of a gun. Pretty authentic looking, too, as I recall. I haven't seen one of those in operation.
Just puffed up out, just like the real thing.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Good to talk with you.
Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
Okay. So long.
I did not know that, Dave. I just got educated.
How did that work, by the way? Did it work on heat, or was there electric in there? Or what made it smoke?
There was a heating element, just like you'd have in a pop-up toaster or something. It was wrapped around Bakelite, or it was a ceramic item. Mm. And then they had what they called a nichrome wire. It was wrapped around that, when you applied the electricity to it, of course, it heated up. The oil just smokes from the sheer heat of the mm-hmm. situation, and they have a driving piston that is a mechanical. Works off a gear on the drivetrain, and that piston pumps just like a.
So that would make the puffs come out.
That's what made the puffs come out.
Yep.
Wow.
Pretty simple, but really effective. And obviously, as boys, we just love that.
You know? Yeah.
Lay on the floor and put your face right beside the train as it comes by and the light comes and the smoke comes. You know, oh, my goodness.
We used to like to, when we got everything all set up, turn the lights out, you know, in the living room or the den or wherever you had the Christmas tree and the train set up, and then just run it, you know, in the dark.
Yes.
Because you had the light on the front of the train, and we had a lit caboose too.
Oh, yeah. the first line piece of equipment.
Yeah, and like you said, turning out the lights—that's where the accessories come into play. You turn the lights out, and now the house lights are on, and the gate, the red lights are on, when the gate comes down. It's magic. You know,
yeah. Yeah, Plasticville had lights inside there. Some of them had their houses. Yeah.
And some of them, some people just ran a string of lights and put lights under each one of the houses and lit them up. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
And the switches that we had anyway, I don't know whether they still have them or not, they lit up red and green, so you mm-hmm. could tell when your train was approaching a switch which way it was going to go.
Right,
you know,
right.
So was it going to go straight on down the track, or is it going to go off onto a siding?
They were like, I'm thinking of the same thing, a little lantern right on the switch that turned when you
flipped
the switch.
Yeah, and it had a... cellophane gels in it, so, and two of them were red and two of them were green.
Yes.
So
yes.
Whenever it flipped around, whenever the track switched, then you saw a different colored light.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, as you said before, Pat, simple but effective. You know?
Definitely. It was magic. It really was. As a kid growing up in that era, now you got to qualify by saying in that era, there was nothing like it to get all that set up and get it all working and just turn the lights out and turn the tree on and just watch.
Something that had to have been developed sometime later in the whole era of model railroading was the magnetic uncoupler. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the early trains didn't have that, right?
Well, the early trains used a drop coupler. It was just a pin that dropped through a ring of some type. Then they had the latch coupler, which was a flip-up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then did
they have mechanical uncouplers? You had to, like, push an arm or something that would uncouple those?
Well, the American Flyer had a piece that came up during up in between the rails.
Yeah, okay.
And the bottom of the knuckle had a piece of metal, just a little like a brush.
Mm-hmm.
And when the two would come in contact, it would kick that metal piece up and in turn open the coupler.
Okay, yeah.
Well, the Lionel train that we had, the couplers actually looked pretty much like a coupler on a real train, but mm-hmm. there was a magnet you could activate that pulled a pin down or something and opened up the coupler.
The original knuckle that you talk about had an electromagnet wrapped around the coupler itself. There was an orange wrappings around there, and it would pull a pin straight back, and the coupler would open. Then later on in the mid-50s, which is what you're talking about, there was just a magnetic plate that when you applied the electricity to this rail that we talked about, which is called a UCS track, when the electricity is applied to that, it creates an electromagnet and pulls that base plate down.
Yeah, just pulled like a little armature, just pulled it down and the coupler would open.
You had to develop quite a bit of skill to uncouple just the right car.
Yeah.
Let's take another call, 283-2525, if you have memories or comments about your model railroad. Hi, caller, this is Dave. Go right ahead, it's your turn.
Hey,
hello?
Dave, this is Jim Pauley from Philadelphia.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Got Pat Gallagher sitting next to you.
Hello, Jim.
Hey, Pat.
Nice
how are you?
Good. Nice to hear from you. What you got?
Nice to hear from you guys. Hey, I hear you're talking about the good stuff, American Flyer.
Well, no, let's have a recount.
An American Flyer devotee.
He
here,
is.
Huh?
He is.
Yes. Well, it's all good stuff. Three trains, fantastic hobby. For me, opened up a lot of doors, of course, create a lot of friendships, even with Pat Galba, although our main connection is the Three Stooges, not so much Toy Trains.
That's for sure, Jim. We go way back, don't we?
Yes, we do, sir.
All right.
So if you want to hear my quick story, I actually did not grow up with Toy Trains, grew up with Aurora slot cars. But when I was 16, started to get into trains, and then when I was 19, I picked up a closet full of American Flyer trains dating from the late 40s and throughout the 50s. But once I got into the American Flyer that year, now we're talking 1979, the bug hit, and I've been a diehard collector ever since, to the point where my basement is pretty much an American Flyer museum, if you will.
Wow. Got a lot of money invested in this hobby, huh?
Probably a lot more time than money. A lot of time.
Jim, do you have an operating layout right now?
I do. The operating layout is approximately 12 foot wide by 20 foot with an operating table, turntable that is, and just about every American Flyer accessory that the A.C. Gilpin Company produced.
Wow.
And everything works. It's pretty much set up like a layout that you would see from the department store hours back in the late 40s, early 50s.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Hey, thanks for joining us. Good to talk with you today.
You're welcome, guys.
Okay.
See you guys.
Thanks, Jim. So long. Wow. Did he say Gilbert? Is that the same company that made the chemistry sets
back
in the day?
Same one.
I had one of those, too. I was all prepared to blow up my train, I guess. I'm not sure.
So you were watching the Addams Family, then, if you're blowing up trains, right, Dave?
But I had one of those chemistry sets.
Yeah.
I think they were called chemistry sets.
Yeah. Gilbert bought the company from, is that right, Dave or Jack? They bought the company from...
American Flyer was originally in Chicago.
Yes.
And was three rail, just like Lionel.
Mm-hmm.
And when A.C. Gilbert purchased the company, then he moved it to New Haven, changed it to two rail, and hence has moved forward ever since.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you mostly deal with, Jack, at your Jack's Tracks train shop?
Oh, Lionel by 15 to 1, mm-hmm. if not more. The I don't know, the Flyer just didn't take off like Lionel did. But then Lionel was some bigger than the other ones, and they could afford to, they literally forced a lot of them out of business.
Mm-hmm.
They advertised so much, and their promotions were second to none as far as pushing their product as opposed to somebody else. And so many reasons to buy Lionel trains through print ads, promotions at the New York showroom. They were relentless. The old man, he was relentless. He was really good at what he did. And I think that's why they were so popular. And sadly, I've read this, the kids that would get their, they'd get an American Flyer set for Christmas, they had to go out and defend their trains to their other friends because everybody else had Lionel, you know. But, it's interesting, the stories right. there. And
that's what kids do. They used to defend your bicycle brand, too, you know.
Right,
I can
right.
remember I had an off-brand bicycle, and I can't remember the name of it. I think it was Bridgestone. I'm not sure. But everybody else had a Schwinn or, you know, one of the more common names, you know.
Yeah.
They'd make fun of my bicycle.
Now, don't make fun of my singing, but here's one of your commercials. That's a real smoke a puffin. That's a whistle you hear. I'm a Lionel toot toot engineer.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, they were advertised a lot on TV back in those days. You get your Christmas catalog from Sears or Montgomery Ward. They had pages and pages and pages of model trains.
Yep.
And Lionel, for what, a dime, and later on for a quarter, they'd send you the catalog in the mail.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Said, send us 10 cents, we'll send you a catalog.
Wow. Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, as you said, they were marketing geniuses.
They really were.
Let's take another call. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi.
I came in about 15 minutes ago, and you have a great guest and an interesting topic.
Mm-hmm.
My father started working for the railroad back in 1930s, and he started out as a Gandy dancer and then worked his way up from there.
Gandy dancer. I thought that was a restaurant down in Pittsburgh.
I'm not sure.
It is, actually. at Station Square.
Okay. Well, anyway, my brother and I have Lionel, and there are a lot of questions I could ask about that. But what I'm interested in finding out, some of these train museums, the actual running train museums, have old-time machinists and boiler makers and engineers, not the captain of the train, but regular mechanical engineers and electrical. I'm wondering, as far as with the model trains, both American Flyer and Lionel, and even, I guess, HO, I'm not that familiar with American Flyer, but I'm wondering, Do they have repair people? Do they have people? I know one of your guests owns a shop, but do most of the folks who have them, the hobbyists, do they have to do their own work, or is there on one of the magazines, do they have ads for it? Or
let's ask Jack Bennett. What about that, Jack?
Well, the company itself has school-trained mechanics, so to speak. I'm one of those. I was required 4 or 5 years ago to go to school. It was out in Canfield, Ohio, and we were there for a week. And we actually went in the factory and repaired trains that had come in.
Hmm.
And it was they call them authorized repair stations, and you get a certificate. If you want to know if your repairman is an authorized repairman, ask him for a certificate.
So if you have an old train from, who knows, 50s or 60s, it doesn't run anymore, they can, depending on the condition, they can be repaired?
Very good. One problem, Dave, I'm only hearing you and not your guests over the phone, but fortunately, with the time delay, I was able to pick up a little bit of that.
All righty. Well, we appreciate the call. Thanks,
Dave. I appreciate you, everything that you do. I love listening to your program. Take care, guys, and enjoy being out there on the rails, even if it's miniature.
That's for sure. Thanks, my friend.
All right, bye.
Thank you. Let's take another call here, 283-2525. Caller, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
This is Ken. I have a 1938 Lionel standard gauge. It's trained, and it has three passenger cars, the tender, and the engine weighs 7 pounds.
Wow.
I've had it for several years ago.
1938, did you say?
Yeah.
Wow. Does it still run?
Yeah.
Any value to that, Jack? Any value to that?
Well, I'd need to know the number of what it is before I can.
It's a 392E.
Yes, there is. That's a good engine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it actually 1938, though?
Boy, I can't tell you that without one of my reference books. But the 392E, I'm guessing now, but somewhere between $300 and
$500. Oh, wow.
The trouble is that the bottom is falling out of the train market. a lot of people back 20, 25 years ago, collecting was really a big deal. And people started to see retirement. This is going to be my retirement portfolio. Well, now all the baby boomers are retiring and trying to cash in that portfolio, and it has just dropped the bottom out of the market.
Yeah, a lot of product. More than... The demand is there. Huh?
Dealers right now, we're paying, when somebody trades it in, we're paying 10 cents on the dollar for MTH and 20 cents on the dollar for Lionel.
Wow. Well, anyway, that's a nice locomotive you have there, sir, 1938. Thanks for joining us.
If it's your brother's, come on down and I'll show it to you.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, my friend. Thanks. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Are young people interested in trains today, Jack, or is it mainly baby boomers like us?
It depends, mainly baby boomers, but it depends on what kind of engineering they've had by their father and their grandfather. I see a lot of young people in the 8, 9, 10, 10 11, 12 years of age. When they come with their grandfather has the enthusiasm to get them involved in it. But most of the kids of today are too busy texting to...
And I think that's why they're going with a lot of Bluetooth technology, trying to pull the younger people in, get them interested, and get them running the trains in a way they're accustomed to, maybe running it off their phone or whatever. I think it's for all the... Mm-hmm. That's why technology is kind of driving things. But the older trains, it's sad to say, they're going the way of the Model Ts. The people that collected them, sadly, you know, are not with us anymore.
Yeah.
And the kids, the younger folks they're not satisfied with just a train going around a circle on a track and puffing some smoke. They want lights, they want sound, they want control, and I think that's the way they have to do that. They have to do it technology-wise to get these kids involved.
So everything's digital today, the new stuff, huh?
Yeah, there's something, if you looked at my layout, I have a man in Canada that takes the cars in the 1 to 43 size, and he works them over and puts LEDs in them, and the headlights work, the taillights work. If it's a police car or an emergency vehicle, all of those lights work. It's really something to behold. When I flip that switch on 12 by 24 with as many of those cars running as you can find, it's just like a circus lit up.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That's the magic right there.
Yeah.
That brings the layout to life.
We need to check lottery numbers before we wrap up here today. So we'll take a final break and be back to wrap up with our guests right after these words.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 6565. Pick three, 272-272. Pick four is 3581. The pick five, 68438. Wild ball for each of those is three. The treasure hunt, 2, 6, 12, 17, and 24. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt, $70,000.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Dr. Jason Clark is an orthopedic surgeon for Butler Health System. He also volunteers as a high school team doctor.
We all hold our breath a little bit when our kids compete, because we know there's always the chance of an injury. For Eric and Sydney, that was a severely injured ankle. Fortunately, I have quick access to the tools and the people they need, giving them the best opportunity to get back out there.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Well, we've concentrated mostly on locomotives and cars, rolling stock, but a lot of accessories also, Jack Bennett, from soup to nuts, really, for a train layout.
Oh, my, there's all sorts of things, but log loaders, barrel loaders, coal loaders, lumber loaders, and then there was the loader-unloader and the culvert loader-unloader, which worked on vibration, which was a real bear to adjust to mm-hmm. make it work right all the time.
Yep.
There was milk unloaders.
We had a milk can unloading
milk
car.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
A little guy threw it out the door, and the can was magnetic, and it landed on a platform that was
a metal platform.
And then the can would stick. Or it would dribble down over the side and fall on the track and short the track
short
out.
Short the track out,
one,
right.
One or the other.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. I wonder if they ever made, the cars, the most popular car made here in Butler at Pullman Standard was a hopper car.
Two-bay hopper.
The bottom opened up. I wonder if they ever had a model like that.
Yes, they did. They made them, and they were stamped made in Butler, Pennsylvania, right on them.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Well, that would be certainly a collector's item around here.
When they came in, I'd order two or three times what I would normally order and stick an ad in the Butler Eagle, and I would get more calls than you can just shake a stick at, and they're not available anymore. But
You have to search to find one of those these days. Yeah. Search the internet or search for sale sites. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there's a big yellow one outside the Butler Transit Authority offices mm-hmm. now.
Interesting.
Full size.
Yeah, interesting story there too. That was a nice find, and a lot of people spent a lot of time on donations to get it there. It was mm-hmm. made in Butler and donated and brought here by this donation and painted by that donation. Very interesting, yeah.
Jack Bennett is here from Jack's Tracks Train Shop outside of Kittanning. When are you open, Jack?
Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 in the evening, and Saturday, 12 noon to 9. Mm-hmm. Closed Sunday.
And what's the address so people can find you?
115 Crane Drive, Kittanning. We've got a little bit of construction on that. It's the old Freeport Road from the Franklin Village Mall. And there's a one-lane bridge there right now with a traffic light on it they're repairing. Mm-hmm. But it's, I'm exactly 1 mile from the light.
Okay. Well, that should be easy to find. Get off 422 right there.
Westcatanning and make the first right and go across the construction and make the third left.
Is this the busiest time of the year for you, holiday time?
Yes, there's always some hard skilled guys that are around it in the summertime. But now, this past week, picked up two brand new customers. So it's hopefully it's going to start.
A couple of nights ago, the atmospheric conditions were right. And along about midnight, I heard a lonely sound of a train whistle. You know how when the atmospheric conditions are right and the wind's right, you can hear that from a long ways off?
Yeah, for sure.
That's a sound like no other.
That's a very comforting sound, at least to me.